Okay, good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled October 18th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed one item of anticipated litigation, and we conferred with our labor negotiators regarding SEIU and CSEA. It was discussion only and no action was taken. At this time, do we have consensus on the order of business? I'll take that as an affirmative response. I'm seeking approval of the minutes of October 4th.
Move approval of the minutes of
October 4th.
I'll second.
So I have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with 2 absent. Student representatives to the board. Okay, I have a crib sheet. You have to be a certain age to know what a crib sheet is. But we'll start with Morro Bay High School, and representing Morro Bay High School, I have Michelle Morosen and Miles Free.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So for our athletics, we have a volleyball home game on Thursday night, which is our senior night, a tennis game versus Napomo, which is also a home game, and on Friday we have a home game versus Santa Maria, which is our senior night as well. Water polo has 3 games this week versus Cabrillo, Paso Robles, and Santa Maria. The clubs at Morro Bay High School, the surf team made around $5,000 at their fundraiser at Pizza Port this last week. And in ASB, we have been arranging a dodgeball tournament that has happened this week where the students and teachers create teams, and it's like a competition to see who can win. And the final is on Friday. And then we're having a costume contest, which the winners win like gift cards to a local restaurant, and also there's going to be donuts.
And then our upcoming event would be the talent show that we're doing for the first time. That's hosted by ASB, and that's going to be on November 17th. And our other coming activities would be Ride to Recovery Cyclist, which we'll be passing through on campus tomorrow. And for those who don't know what that is, it's a rehabilitation for veterans. And then Morro Bay High School Counseling is hosting a college knowledge night regarding to colleges, to parents and students. So college representatives will be visiting the campuses, our campus, in the next couple months. And our counseling department is holding a program to help student manage topics of stress and anxiety, and the Voice Through Movement will promote students' well-being. And our PSAT will begin tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Okay, thank you. Ride to Recovery. Am I remembering correctly? I think the board received an email from Mr. Allstadt regarding that. It comes through 12 or 12:30 midday?
Yeah. It should be.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much. Okay, now we have Cami Love from San Luis Obispo High School. Welcome.
Is this on? Okay. So last week we had our school librarian, Jen Sawyer. She set up a pop-up library on campus at lunch. So she just brought out a lot of new books that are in our library, and she was encouraging Teen Read Week. So that was a really successful thing that she did for our student body last week. This week at SLO High is homecoming, so it's an incredibly busy week. We've had dress-up days every day. We have float building. The parade is on Friday, and the dance is on Saturday. And so each grade level is a different sport because our theme is Olympics this year. So we have the freshmen as track and field, and then we have water sports, winter sports, and racket sports. So each grade level is represented by a different sport. And the game is on Friday. We will play Atascadero, so that should be exciting. And the court, the homecoming king and queen, are crowned at the game on Friday. And then the dance is Saturday at 7 p.m. And as of now, our girls' golf team is undefeated, and that's where our representative is tonight. She's at golf, so Slow High has been doing really well there. The band won several different awards when they were in Atascadero. Last week, they won Best in Show and Best March, and that was in Atascadero, so they've been doing incredible. Our Future Farmers of America, our FFA program, is in Indianapolis right now for nationals. The novice and advanced parliamentary procedure teams are competing, so they'll be there this entire week. So we're really cheering them on and hoping they come back with a win. And we, for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, next week our school will be having a spirit day, so that'll be encouraging all students to dress up in pink representing breast cancer awareness.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any board? I don't see any board comments. So thank you for coming. You are welcome to stay and express your thoughts, feelings, your views on any item that's on our agenda tonight. But we're mindful that you also have homework and other obligations, and so you may also feel free to cut out at any time. Thank you for coming. Let's see, at the time the agenda was printed, no correspondence had been received. And now we move on to public comment. We don't appear to have received any written requests to speak. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the board in public comment? Okay, seeing none then, we'll move on to the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I have a couple items just to review. So first up, Surf's Up at Morro Bay High, just for the board to know. So, you know, one of the parameters for the surf team to be able to participate as a school-sponsored event was, you know, having insurance. So unfortunately, CISC, our carrier, doesn't offer insurance to surf teams unless it actually is like an in-school program. And so a lot of time has been spent by Danny Fahey, their club advisor, and Sean Allstad, and myself, back and forth. Well, we found insurance. So actually went through CISC. They found an insurance company, and so it looks like Morro Bay High is going to have a surf team that they can actually talk about at school and have meetings and discuss. And so it's a win-win for the kids, I think, and the fact that we can feel, you know, good about it, covered. CISC is okay with it, so it's, you know, positive step. Took a long time to kind of get here.
Yeah.
You'll remember the meetings, the kids coming and talking about it, and those types of things. So I'm just glad that we were able to come to hopefully scenario. So hopefully they all stay safe and surf away. State budget numbers came in for the month. It looks like tax revenues kind of came in about what was expected, and so that was positive news, not negative from that standpoint. And then lastly, I met with Joe Miller, who's here, and some of our tech team, Charles Hahn and Neil Oden. We met with the county, and so we've been, you know, a long time ago we had some discussions back and forth. You know, we have our internet asset, basically, that the district owns. We own that along with the county. And so a lot of that was kind of the knowledge was people that just kind of had it in their head. Things were written down, focused on it. So it was really nice to meet with the county officials to kind of lay out what our MOU is, spell it out. You're going to have an item later on the board docket about the, you know, basically upgrading our phone system. And so this was a critical component of being able to do that, was have that loop, the internet loop, so that if it went down in any place along the road, that we could back it up. And so it was actually a really great conversation, really positive with them. And I think there's some really cool potential partnerships with the county. when we look at community Wi-Fi and potentially other things like that. So hopefully that meeting will kickstart some of those, and we'll probably be sharing an MOU with the board about making that MOU UMAN loop work. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have the educational services update. I can't get it up. Are you presenting, Dr. Prater?
I am.
Thank you.
Well, there's three things I'd like to mention tonight, just as an update for the board. As you heard earlier from our student representative from SLO High, we have a number of SLO High students at the National FFA Conference competition. And so I got a text today from Anna Bates, the teacher, very proud teacher. And so as of now, it looks like our kids are second overall in the nation and still fighting for a collectively higher score. But, of course, just to give you an insight, she felt that our kids should have been number one, and the judges need to go back to judging school. I'll leave it at that. The second part is I got a text today from Mrs. Newland, our personnel director, saying you need to come and check out the teacher or the evaluation committee that we negotiated back probably 4 or 5 years ago with our new evaluation tool. And it was collaboratively designed. And just so you know, it is an ongoing and fluid process that we continue to negotiate the relationships around things that need to be worked out through the evaluation tool. And so I went into B3 and watched and observed, and the president of the Teacher Association, Mr. Craig Stewart, looked at me and he said, "This is the best thing we do." And so what I observed was teachers and administrators who represent the team working together through complex issues within the model. And it was a beautiful thing, and I just want to commend Kristen and her team for doing that. And I think it's a great and excellent exemplar. And, of course, we'll be presenting that very thing at the CSBA conference this year. We are proud of that. And then lastly, I just want, since we're here at the Los Osos Middle School multi-use room, want to just give Mrs. Lindley Sainsbury, the drama teacher here and core teacher here, a shout-out. The drama program she's putting together here at Loam's is quite remarkable. And so I happen to walk by here one afternoon and see Mrs. Sainsbury in here with about 4 or 5 theater light guru people. And it was a really phenomenal example of a teacher really pushing and advocating for a program. And so, and I appreciate Ryan getting his staff and his team to come here and assist with some of the setups so that we can convert this space into a drama space whenever needed throughout the year. So just want to just give Mrs. Sainsbury and her effort a shout out.
Thank you. Measure D update. Mr. Pinkerton.
So I'm going to be really short at this one because I'm pretty much dominating the rest of the agenda tonight with Measure D. So I just, you know, hopefully the board, it was an educational experience to go through all of the budgets for the Measure D projects and priorities and the estimates of where we're at. We'll continue to refine those. We've been working on it, Mr. Palazzo in particular, and so we'll continue to update the board as we kind of move along. And again, we'll be bringing most likely at the next meeting, it looks like a couple of our big projects that we hope to start this summer, which were kind of the four plans that we went forward, which is the kind of STEAM classroom wing at Morro Bay High along with the Student Sports Center, and then the annex at the 12 classroom building at SLO High, and then a little bit later we'll bring the C.L. Smith office as well as the Student Support Center and Performing Arts space at San Luis High. So that's it's going to start ramping up in terms of the big projects, which is very exciting.
Okay. Seeing no board questions, we'll move on. The next item, 8.01, is a resolution. Resolution number 04-16-17, grant deed from Harborview RV Park, LLC. Mr. Pinkerton, I believe.
So this is the final step for us to make the transition, and so they actually asked for they wanted a board resolution which stated the change in the grant deed, and so we said we would bring that to the board for approval. And so, as you know, at Morrow Elementary School, there was a little kind of piece of land that had been the current mobile home park tenant or owner had basically, it's been part of their property for a long time, and so actually probably in our best interest to go ahead and deed that over, that little tiny sliver, to make it, you know, it's just clearly not, I would say, in our interest to have that, especially on his portion of the property. So if it's okay with the board, I'd like you to pass this resolution tonight.
Okay. Mrs. Sheffer.
I will move approval of resolution number 04-16-17.
Second.
So I have, let me first go to the public. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to this resolution? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Millar. Mrs. Holmes.
You can use mine, Kim. There goes.
Okay, operator error. Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Passes 5-0.
Thank you. Item 8.02, again a resolution, number 05-16-17, approval to open new Fund 73 for Morrow Bay High School Scholarship Fund. Mr. Pinkerton.
So this is a very exciting moment, I think, for the students, especially at Morrow Bay High School, as well as for the board and for our district, and that Mabel Verthal, our former employee at Morrow Bay High School, was, you know, just absolutely tremendous that she gifted a large portion of her estate for scholarships specifically for Morrow Bay High School students. And so part of the trust, in terms of the trust, the way it was laid out, was this had to be put in a restricted fund specifically for Morrow Bay High School scholarships, and that it had to be under the board's jurisdiction, basically. And so that's what this fund is going to do. So it'll be a separate accounting specifically for those scholarships. There is a scholarship committee at Morrow Bay High School that will actually disperse the funds. And so, you know, we'll keep the board updated on how that progresses. And just very exciting. San Luis Obispo High School currently has some scholarships like this and that have been established over the years and set up for San Luis High students. And so this one in particular will be nice for the students at Morrow Bay High.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak to this resolution? Seeing no one, then I would be very proud to... Oh, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I think you just reassured me. I just wanted to make sure that this donation was made in compliance with the board policy on donations, which on its face could be problematic, except, as you just explained, San Luis Obispo High School has their own scholarship fund. And so I just wanted to clarify that. And as always, we appreciate donations, but we want to make sure that they're consistent with our board policy when we accept them. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Absolutely.
I'll yield to you.
Okay. If there's no other comment, then I'm very appreciative of this gift of education, continuing education to the students at Morrow Bay High School. And I'm pleased to move Resolution 05-16-17, approval to open new Fund 73 for Morrow Bay High School Scholarship Fund.
Sorry. I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion by myself and a second by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Millar? Passes 5-0.
Item 8.03, again a resolution, number 06-16-17, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. At our last meeting, you held a public hearing
to determine that each pupil in each of our schools and throughout our district had sufficient textbooks in the areas of mathematics, science, social studies, English language arts, including English language development. In addition, we're able to determine that the district has sufficient textbooks and instructional materials for pupils in foreign language, health, and lab science. So tonight, we're coming back with to you to ask you to adopt the resolution titled Determination of Sufficient Textbooks and Instructional Materials.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, then I'll bring it back. Seeking a motion on this resolution?
I'll make a motion, but I'd also like to make a comment.
Certainly.
I think one of the keys to this is the investment that we make in the students, and that there's a classroom set, and there's also a set that the students can take home, and that's a major investment in education. So I'd love to move approval of Resolution 061617.
So I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Sheffer.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay, item 9.01 is approval of the 2016-17 single plans for student achievement. That would be Mrs. Shields and Mrs. McGrath, I believe. Or just Mrs. Shields?
Well, no, it's both of us.
It's both of you? Okay.
We represent that K-12-ness for you. Okay. So the State Education Code requires that the Board of Education annually review and approve, hopefully, the school site plans from each of our school sites that use both state and federal funding to support their school's goals. A copy of each of the 15 school site plans, nearly 394 pages, were sent to you for review and hopefully for approval tonight. Each of our school site councils at each of our school sites oversee the site planning process. The team is made up of school staff, including teachers and support staff, parents and community, and in the secondary schools, even students. And their goal is to forward the vision of the school by looking at various forms of data, both student achievement data, parent and student perception data, attendance, discipline, and other forms of site data to develop their plans. Sites use a variety of local, state, and federal funds to develop those action plans.
Part of our plans now contain progress monitoring, so we're excited about, especially at secondary, that's a goal for us this year, is to really look at what data can we use throughout the year to measure, are we reaching our goal and are we headed in the right direction, and what changes can we make along the way in order to reach those goals. You'll notice that within the high school single plans, they also incorporate their WASC goals. So as they work toward accreditation, that they are required to kind of create one unified document. So you'll notice kind of a difference there with the high schools. I want to just give a lot of credit to our principals who have really collaborated with one another in order to look at metrics and to keep things focused around our six focus areas. They have aligned them with the LEA plan and the LCAP, and I think there's a real strength in that, of having all three of those documents aligned. So you will see our six focus areas as a common structure within all of the single school plans. So today we ask if you have any questions and hope for your approval.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, just real quickly, I emailed with Kim just two questions. And I just want to thank the administration and staff, because I'm not sure how many reports you do right now. I know it's LCAP and LEA and there's others, and they're all pretty much asking the same information. And I know that you've worked hard to sort of get all that combined and base it on the LCAP and to use our six board focus areas. So I want to appreciate that, because this looked like just one more work thing that you needed to do. I also wanted to say there's a lot of amazing things going on. I noticed at one school site they have an administration one-on-one with freshmen. There's been an improvement in absenteeism. which is pretty hard in our district since everybody's 90% or over 90%, and it continues to improve. And then I was really intrigued with the plans to involve parents through math nights and sending materials home, which would have helped me if my parents had had those. So I would, unless someone else wants to, I'll move approval.
Let's see, is there additional comment? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, is your light on?
Yes, thank you.
I can't see.
I have a question for you and then a comment. There's something called the Silicon Valley Math Initiative that some of the schools, were all the schools involved in that or just some of the schools?
So the Silicon Valley Math Institute, SVMI, is something that we have been coordinated with all of the schools, really. It's it's been the organization that has really helped to kind of stay ahead of us and serve as a consultant when it comes to just the major math changes that took place with Common Core. So that's been a pretty incredible resource for us at a district level when it comes to math.
What I found interesting about it, and I'm just now looking at C.L. Smith, for example, the math scores, the improvement in math scores using that program, they knocked it out of the park on that. What were they doing differently? How are we teaching that differently than we were teaching whatever SBAC or whatever?
I would speak to the change. Well, first of all, 4 years of professional development for our teachers based on not only the work from Silicon Valley Math Initiative, but from our private consultant, Barb Blonky. Along with that, we had a change in our curriculum, and last year was our first year of implementing the College Preparatory Math, or CPM as we call it, math program in sixth grade. And several of our sites saw some, you know, early pretty good progress with it. But we're still, I would say, fine-tuning it. I want to also share that on that sixth grade common assessment where we're using the Silicon Valley assessments, we go each year, our assessment TOSA, and in past years our math TOSA, so we'll figure out who will be going this year, and we get the latest performance tasks from the Silicon Valley. They teach us how to give those assessments, how to score them, and I feel like each year we're kind of upping the ante for our students as we get stronger in math teaching.
Very impressive. And then just the other thing I wanted to ask and then comment on is it appeared to me as though our SED students, our socioeconomically disadvantaged students, are more entrenched. Their numbers seem to not move as much. You know, the needle on those numbers really feels stuck. Is that your experience? Is that what is going on?
Yeah. They have moved in a positive direction overall as a district. I couldn't quote the exact number off the top of my head, but we are seeing growth in that area. But I also will say that there are many of our schools are really focusing and targeting those students and trying to become even more specific and more targeted about what is holding those students where they are, what are the needs, and what we could do as a school district to help them. So I feel like schools are really honing in on that and targeting that as a focus for us.
I certainly didn't mean to imply that mm-hmm. we're not working on that. I mm-hmm. definitely see the mm-hmm. movement, but I also saw it as such a difficult problem. Mm-hmm. And as I was awake in the middle of the night thinking about that, and then this morning on NPR, I heard this report about how that is a phenomenon mm-hmm. everywhere. And basically, it was what I think, and we've all talked about this as a district too, in part that's going to get worse because what's happening with the haves is that the haves have more technology, have more time, have more interaction with parents at home, and the socioeconomically disadvantaged children have less of that. And so I bring it up just because it's something I know as a board we're very concerned about and interested in and very interested in having this technology available to all of our children, and we're doing our best with that. So as we go forward in that direction, I hope we find a little more movement, but it will be an ongoing problem for every district in the country. But I just wanted to comment on that.
I wanted to just comment on the fact that I'm so grateful that we continue to collect longitudinal data over time and that we've disaggregated our students. I think this information, our ability to drill down and is really helping us be able to target specific student populations as well as not change with the direction of the wind, you know, to say that we're getting good data over time. And I think that's very important. Also, I think the collection of all of the data, I very much appreciate. I know it's a huge amount of work, but the collaborative nature, pulling in parents from different groups, students, I think it goes back to parent involvement at the, I'll be biased here, at the site council level, at realizing the work that is done by the parents as well as ELAC and DLAC, and the students gathering input from the students, I think, is really helpful too. I mean, all these people with the boots on the ground. I would also argue that some of the good numbers we're seeing is proving the value of our early adoption of Common Core, that we are reaping the fruits of that labor that I know people worked really hard on, even going back to developing some of our own math curriculum and some of our own putting things together at our local level because it didn't exist out there yet. And that I think kudos to everyone for all the hard work that was done by developing some of those materials also means that the same people who helped develop it know it so well because they had a hand in making it happen, that I think that also raises the level of teaching, because the people who wrote some of this curriculum are then out teaching it. And I think that speaks to the professionalism and dedication and devotion of our teachers. So this is a huge project, but it's very much appreciated.
If I could respond to one of the things that you said related to our this ongoing effort of looking at data over a number of years, I'm so impressed with the work that our principals and our staffs are doing in identifying those kids who aren't making the gains that we're seeing. And if you look closely at some of the plans, it can almost be a little bit confusing at first. But when you look at the RTI goal or response to intervention, and you'll see 10 out of 11, 10 kids that have been identified as we want to make a real push to their academics in math or in reading or in writing, we're targeting them. We're targeting them by name. We're targeting them by an individual plan that's put in place for those students, and then they're doing that progress monitoring throughout the year to keep track to make sure that they get to that goal. It's pretty strategic.
Okay, let's see. Then I just had one comment myself. I'm looking at Baywood because Mrs. Donnelly is here, but I did wonder, I noticed that we had a number of outside the school day activities for parents to become involved and to be educated on various things, literacy nights, for example, and what have you. And I do see at Baywood that there is some provision for childcare, but I wonder, across the board, it wasn't apparent that there was a provision for childcare for our English language learner parents and our SED parents to be able to attend because childcare was provided. And I'm wondering, Ms. Shields, do you know, across the board, are we making an effort to provide childcare?
I'm not going to look at you and tell you every single nighttime event, every time we have anything, that there is childcare provided, but I believe it is quite the majority of times that we do. I was recently out at, in fact, it was with Mr. Unger, at Monarch Grove's evening. Now, mind you, the children were in the room with their parents, and they were reading, and so there wasn't a childcare need, but they did have some young children care that night, preschool
right.
care. There was also translation provided that night, and I think that's more the norm, where you see not only child care but translation provided. If we want parents to come, we need to make it easy for them to get there.
Absolutely.
The other thing that we're not mentioning is food. And we like to, when we really want to get families and parents there, we try to have some type of refreshment or pizza dinner, and just to make it a little bit more convenient for our families who've been working, and that needs to be part of their evening. And I would love to invite Mrs. Donnelly up to the mic if she wanted to add anything to that. You're good? She's good.
She's good. Okay. And then my other question had to do with the composition of the site councils. It seems to vary at various schools, both in number and in composition. And I wonder if you could comment on that. This is an elementary question.
It's been a few years since I've looked at this, you know, the requirement, but my memory is you need to have, help me out here, my two former school site council members, half of the representation needs to be parents or community. Another half needs to be staff, which includes principal, can include teachers, can include support staff, can include secretary. And then in secondary, there's the component about students.
Right. So I think there are different ways to make up that balance, but the balance is needed. But the exact numbers needed on each side, it does still just need to remain balanced. So I think you'll see hopefully a balance on each one. You know, I can vouch for the secondary, but it can be a different number that comprises the group as a whole.
The total number doesn't have to be the same.
So you might have a school that has 5 site council members and a school that has 12 site council members, and that's just a site-based decision. Mm-hmm. But what you're telling me is that the composition, the ratios need to remain constant, regardless of the number.
Yes, and I'd be happy to follow up with what the exact regulation is. Just, I think that would comfort you.
I don't need it, no, okay. I'm not
it
uncomfortable.
It doesn't give us a number that you need to have 10 people on your site council. You need to have equal representation.
As I recall, having done this at elementary and secondary, each site creates its own bylaws and its own balance. I mean, the equal piece is true, but one school may say 6 and 6, another, and then at the high school, we did have a piece about the number of parents, you know, 2 parents, 2 students, you know, the makeup was part of the bylaws.
I think in general, it's easier to get parents at the beginning end of their children's school career to be involved in committees like the School Site Council. The other thing that's important to note is that the members elect their own members, meaning the parents and community elect the parent and community representatives, the staff elect their members, and often that means getting volunteers and getting a thumbs up.
Okay, having spent, I think, 4 years on the Baywood Site Council as a parent, and then 2 years, additional years, as a community member, and having served on the site council here at Los Osos Middle School, I'm somewhat familiar with how the process works. But I did notice in going through the SPSAs that there was not a great representation of community membership. And I'm wondering if there is specific outreach to get community members to join school site councils. If not, is that something we might consider pursuing? Okay, if there's no additional board comment, then I'll move approval of this item. Okay, so we have a motion by myself, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously, and my computer has gone to Yahoo. So let me try to... Right. Yeah, pardon me. I need to get a few things from Zulily here. Okay, item 9.02, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant Closure Impact Report, number 5, Mrs. Newland.
Well, good evening. As you mentioned, this is the 5th report in a series of reports on the impact of the closure of Diablo Canyon. And if you'll remember that there are 5 things that make San Luis Coastal unique that we have identified in previous reports. And one of those is our salaries, benefits, and working conditions. So that is the topic of tonight's conversation. And I'm pleased to see that we have members of our large employee groups. We have SEIU, MEC, CSEA. Well, Joe was just here for CSEA and SLCTA here this evening. And so these are the groups that we're going to be talking about this evening. We have a long history of excellence in our district in the areas of salaries, benefits, and working conditions because of the enhanced revenues that we have had from Diablo Canyon. So this isn't something that's new to us. This has been in the making for decades that we are that we have excellent salaries, benefits, and working conditions, as you will see. So the first group that I'd like to start with is our certificated employees. Our certificated employees are made up of all of our teachers, nurses, psychologists, librarian, etc. And so that is our certificated. They're all non-management employees, and certificated employees are those that hold a credential through the Commission on Teacher Credentialing. So the first data point that I collected was our beginning teacher salaries. And if you'll look at the left-hand side of the slide that's up there, our countywide average for beginning teacher salaries is $43,782. And if you'll see on the right-hand side, you'll see all the districts in our county. We have 10 districts in San Luis Obispo County. And you can see that San Luis Coastal comes in second to the highest at $46,000. 054. And I'll note that Cayucas and Coast are also two other basic aid or excess property tax districts, and so you'll see them frequently among the top districts as well. I'd like to point out that our beginning teachers, typically, our teachers come with experience from other districts. Because we have an attractive beginning teacher salary schedule, the average teacher for the last 2 years started at between step 7 and 8. So that would mean they're coming from other districts where they pay less than the other districts and coming to us, presumably for the salaries, the benefits, and the working conditions that we have at San Luis Coastal. And so we have been able to attract some of the best and the brightest, as we feel, from some of the other districts, which doesn't always make us popular with the other districts, but it is a fact that we have in our district. Then when we move to mid-career teacher salaries, I took this data point from step 11, column 3, because this is frequently where our teachers, the highest point that a teacher can come to us from another district is at step 11, because we give 10 years of teaching credit to teachers that come into our district. If they have had 10 years within the last 10 years of teaching experience, they can start at this point. So that's why we frequently are able to get teachers from the districts that are above us to come to our district, because we pay higher. And so sometimes, maybe even initially, they'll take a little bit of a pay loss if, let's say, they have 15 years of teaching experience, but they know that it will only be for a year or two that they will have a pay loss, because, as you'll see in the next slide, then they surpass the districts that they came from. So our mid-teacher salary, this would be step 11, column 3, so 60 units, is $71,121, whereas the county average on the left-hand side is $67,017. And the last data point that I collected were our teacher salaries at year 25. This is the top point on our salary schedule, although some of salary schedules go beyond year 25 up into year 30, 35. That's rare. Most salary schedules go to 25, but some do go to 30. These are all salary schedules at 25 years with the most amount of education possible. And our salary is the top in the county. You'll also notice that Coast and Cayucas are the other two basic aid or excess property tax districts that sit right above us. And the countywide average is $85,196. You'll notice that, you know, as we go through the Diablo Canyon closure, our revenues are going to be much closer to the larger districts in the county. So you have Atascadero, Lucia Mar, Paso Robles right in there in the middle, and that is where our revenues will fall when we lose the excess revenues from Diablo Canyon. The next slide shows our health and welfare contributions. So what this slide is the highest plan that a certificated employee teacher could choose is our 100% plan. And so this, the cost to the district, that is the contribution that we make to an employee's health care plan, if they choose that 100% plan, is $11,607. So an employee is also paying $600 a month or $6,000 a year, but we are paying $11,607 for that same plan. So we're paying more. We have a formula for the way that we do health insurance. We contribute the first $5,000, and then we split the excess. So in this case, we would have paid the, it's a 100% plan, we would have paid the first $5,000, and the excess would have been $12,000. So the employee would have paid $6,000, and we would have paid $6,000. And so that's why we have a total of $11,607, which is the highest contribution. But what else is significant about this is we're the only district in the county to not have a hard cap. A hard cap means that that amount does not increase unless it goes through negotiations. In our case, it automatically increases because we pay $5,000 plus a 50-50 split. So when it increases both for the district and for the employee. So what the county average there is $9,659 for a district to contribute to each one of its employees for the most expensive plan, and we contribute $11,607. So the last slide for certificated employees is the maximum total compensation. I took the last two slides, that is the highest amount you could earn on the salary schedule in San Luis Coastal or in the other districts, and added it to the most expensive salary. And this is the maximum amount that we would contribute to a certificated employee on the teacher salary schedule. So you can see we're at 108,378. And you can see that, again, Coast and Cayucas are right near us. But the countywide average is 94,855. And I just want to say that we are really proud of our salary schedules. This adds, as I mentioned, an ability for us to attract and retain our certificated employees. Our employees rarely leave us once they come to us. They usually retire from the district. The next slide I wanted to to explain was not only salaries and benefits, but also working conditions. So we feel that people want to come work in our county because of the excellent working conditions that we have. And here are some of the examples. First of all, experienced staff.
Could I ask a question before you leave salary and comp, or total comp? Would it be, in order to really to arrive at total comp, would you need to include the contribution the district makes to the state teachers' retirement system?
Yes, yes. Those would be additional costs, but these are things that the employee would benefit from, because if we didn't provide that benefits, the employee would be paying it. So this is direct benefits to the employee. I guess you could also say, yes, they would have to pay their own retirement, but, yeah, that's not, yeah. That's an equal playing field throughout the state, because it's a percentage based on your salary. And yes, when our salaries are higher, then the amount that we contribute to their retirement is going to be higher, and it's going to be a higher benefit to them when they go to retire. So yes, that would be also be a benefit that we contribute.
Okay, thank you.
And then the working conditions that we feel are significant are experienced staff. And we have that experienced staff because of the high salaries and benefits and excellent working conditions. We have generous leave policies. We're the only district in the county that offers 12 days of sick leave to our certificated staff. Everybody else offers the Ed Code requirement of 10 sick leave days per year. We have small schools, as we have mentioned, and will be a focus of the next report, so I won't go into a lot of detail on that, but we have small schools and small class sizes. We have retiree health benefits, as do the large school districts. So CMR, Atascadero, and Paso Robles also have this, but having come from the county office, this is a significant benefit because employees can move here, and if they once they teach for 10 years, they can get health benefits to age 65 paid for partly by the district, just as if you were an active employee, and that's a great benefit because then you can retire before the age of 65 and have those health care benefits before Medicare would kick in, and as we mentioned, competitive salaries and benefits. I don't know if you have any questions about certificated, because next I'm going to move on to our classified employees. Okay. So with our classified employees, classified employees, as you may know, are different from certificated employees in that they have multiple jobs on a job on a salary schedule. So in order to compare salaries, I had to pick a job. And so I thought to myself, okay, what jobs are we most likely to find in every school district in our county? Because, you know, some school districts like Pleasant Valley have 100 students and a staff of 6 certificated employees, and others like ourselves, we have 1,000 employees. So I had to think, okay, which, and by the way, we have about 400 certificated employees, and we have about 450 classified employees, so we have more classified employees. So I chose 3 positions that I thought everybody would have. So the first one is our custodians. This would be in our SEIU group, because every school district in the county has a custodian. And it's an hourly basis, so the countywide average for a custodian's pay is starting at $14.77 and goes up to $19.76 on average. What you'll notice is we're really competitive at step one, with Cayucas being the only school district. And remember, Cayucas, they could be also driving the bus and doing a lot of other things because they're a small school, but on their salary schedule, this is what they told me the custodian was making. But you'll notice at the end, we come in number one, and the reason for that is that we have a much larger salary schedule than all the other districts with 22 steps. A typical salary schedule for classified employees would be 6 steps, maybe up to 10 steps, but to have 22 steps is very unusual. And so that's why you see the end amount being so much higher than the other districts. The next position I chose to look at was the special education instructional aide. In our district, this is called the paraeducator. But I chose, we have a paraeducator 1 and 2 position. I chose the entry level. So the first special education para position or an instructional aide in special education is the position I chose to study. So the county hourly average for that would be $13.42 to, at the end of the salary schedule, $17.90. In our district, we start at $15.92, which is only, Cayucas is the only district that has a higher one, but you can then see the effects of the 22-step salary schedule because we end $5 higher than the next district, which would be Cayucas. The third position, I chose 3 from the classified unit, 1 from from SEIU and then 2 from CSEA. This is a CSEA position at elementary school secretary, and the county hourly average is $15.09 up to $20.52. Cayucas has a school secretary that's also the superintendent secretary, so that job description was not applicable really for comparison, but if you'll notice that we come in very well when we talk about our elementary school secretaries at $20.90, so $5 higher than our closest competitor at Templeton, and then quite a significant amount, like $15 above the next district, or if you look at Coast, they're at $20, so $15 there above the Coast amount for their elementary school secretary. Next, in looking at benefits, it's very similar to the certificated. Many districts offer the same amount to certificated classified and management employees. And we do, so that's why our amount's still $11,607. But in the case of some districts, they've negotiated different amounts for their classified employees, and that would be the case of Coast, because they offer more for classified employees in Coast than they do for their certificated employees. And again, this is the highest plan that they offer, and it would have gone through negotiations with their CSEA group, the highest plan they offer, and what the district contributes toward that plan. So the county average for classified employees is $9,425, and we come in at $11,607, with Coast coming in at $14,000. For working conditions, we feel that these are some of the things you saw with certificated. We have a competitive salary schedule. We have generous leave policies. We have excellent benefits as far as personal necessity leave that's higher than other groups. We have small schools, so therefore, you know, easier for cleaning and for servicing our public and all of that. And then, again, the same retiree health benefits that we discussed with certificated. Any questions that you have for classified employees? The last group that I wanted to look at is our confidential and management employees. And for our confidential management employees, I chose, as in the last groups, I chose a position that I thought would be found in all of the different districts that I studied. And so the first one this was a tough one because districts are so different when it comes to the management of an organization. They have different levels, and the larger the district, the more levels they have. They have supervisors, they have directors, they have assistant superintendents, maybe all within a department, whereas a small school might have the superintendent that functions all positions within a district office. So the positions that I chose for this, the first position I chose that everybody had except for Cayucas has it rolled into the elementary secretary, is the executive assistant to the superintendent. And you can see that we fare well. The county average is $4,782 at the beginning of the salary schedule and $5,851 at the end of the schedule. And our schedule is second only to Lucia Marr's schedule. And the second position I chose, I only chose two to study that I could really find that were good comparables. And everybody had an elementary school principal, so I could choose that position. Well, Cayucas and Pleasant Valley have an elementary, middle school, superintendent, principal that does all of those positions, so I didn't choose those to compare. But you can see our elementary principals do very well in our district. And remember, when our teachers' salaries are higher, as a result, the principal's salaries are going to be higher because it's all in comparison to one another. So therefore, our management salaries are going to be higher because our teachers' salaries are higher. The countywide average for our elementary school principals is $93,726, and at the end of the schedule, $109,603. And you can see that our elementary principals are well compensated compared to our peers. Our health and welfare contributions, again, ours remains $11,607 because that's what we provide for all of our employees, but the countywide average is $9,763 for management and confidential employees. Working conditions for managers are similar to all the other groups. The one that I would like to point out is for managers, they typically, many times, they come from outside the county. So the fact that we're located in beautiful San Luis Obispo County does not hurt us. So that central close location, I say, is an excellent benefit for us in our comparisons, and also the support that we have, not only the small schools, but the support from the district office. We have a lot of teachers on special assignment. As you have heard, the programs and services in another one of the presentations that Rick did, Rick Robinette, talked about all those extra supports that we have, and that is very beneficial to our management and confidential employees because it helps support their work. I also just personally have to tell you that I came from the County Office of Education, and when Rick Robinette called and encouraged me to apply, he said, "Will you consider applying for this position?" I was perfectly happy in my position. But then when he said, "But look at the salary, which is much higher. Look at the benefits, which is much higher. You can get retirement to age 50, 65, and your daughter can go right down the hill and go to school right next to you." You know, it's kind of hard to pass that up. So I am a personal testament, I guess, to this this story here. So in conclusion, we are really proud that employees are a priority in our district. It allows us to attract and retain the best employees that we think in every realm across our organization. We are as competitive, if not the top, from all the other districts in our county. This has come over years, decades, of excess funding that we have received from Diablo Canyon. This is not a 5-year occurrence. This has been a 30-year or more occurrence because of the excess money that we have gotten from Diablo Canyon. The fourth bullet here, as we have mentioned in all the other reports that we are doing, San Luis Coastal is going to lose $8 million in revenue by 2025, and that is the one of the things that is facing us as a district. Our personnel expenditures represent 85% to 90% of our budget. So personnel expenditures are going to have to be reexamined in light of this. So Walt. That is $8 million per year, yes.
Because it's a little ambiguous in the way that it was written.
$8 million as I say to people, eventually 14% of our budget, we're going to have to be leaner by 14%. 14%, you can't take it from everything outside of personnel. You're going to have to, we have to somehow look at personnel in some way, through attrition, through a myriad of other ideas. But this, the point of this presentation is just to present one of those five things that makes us unique. Any other questions?
No. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, then I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board comment? Thank you, Mrs. Newland.
Thank you.
Item 9.03, lost all my computers, is approve the VOIP Communications Modernization Contract, and that is Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, and I'm bringing up Mr. Miller as well to help me out and hopefully answer any questions the board might have. So we have a phone system that's over 14 years old, and I probably shouldn't say what we say sometimes when we're using our current phone system in terms of pressing the 13 buttons to get a voicemail or all the different things that attribute to it. But it's basically it's an outdated system that's breaking down, that doesn't have support anymore. I mean, it's time. It was time for us to kind of invest in the phone system. And so I got to hand it to Joe and our tech team and getting together and really doing their homework to find the right system, the right procurement method. We actually worked with Mr. Holcomb in terms of the contract and how we pulled that together. But I'm going to have Joe kind of explain the process, how we got to where we are today to ask the board to approve this proposal.
Right. Yeah. It's been about 15 months in the making. So it's been a while. We looked at about seven different systems. Kind of weighed it down, and you know, you start looking at a phone and what's a phone. You know, it's just a phone call. But really, it's a much larger scale, and this is one of those things that takes IT into the next realm, almost, I'll say, because it strategic alliances between all the departments. Well, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? Well, we're trying to do digital signage, maybe emergency notifications, making sure that we can do a lockdown in a timely manner, notifying the parents then. And it's a more of a communication system that really was the end result. And looking now at this communication system and all of our needs with that, all of those phone systems just kind of went down the tube, and we said we need something much greater. And there were only a couple of players that really had what we were looking for. One was Avaya, and then the other one was Cisco. And we've always purchased HP products, and HP is a great product. We love it. And in some cases, we have HP running, you know, for just the same amount of years, 14 years, and it's really rock solid. But what's the next best thing? Is Cisco in the IT realm? And unfortunately, HP doesn't have any phone products, but Cisco does. And this is more of, they call it unified communications. So it's taking the phone and taking all those analog lines, which are pretty much going to go away with AT&T here pretty soon. I don't know if you've seen news reports, but all those old analog lines are going away, and we're utilizing our UMAN, our fiber network, that in many cases, I'll call it strategic advantages. It's almost taking our fiber, which is almost more reliable at this point than the AT&T copper phone system that's still out there, and utilizing it in ways that provides redundancy in case the power goes out, and weighing all those advantages to do we need to spend, you know, all that money on this when we have all of our stuff that's already redundant within itself? So it's just taking all those advantages and putting it together into what we have before us, a phone system that does much more than that, of course. It does digital signage, clocks, bells, paging, emergency notification. It integrates with our school messenger system. So if there is a lockdown and principal decided to initiate that on their cell phone or in the office or whatever it might be, the parents would be notified instantly without having to have someone from the school site call up to technology, I need help, I got to record a message right away, you know. And especially in a disaster scenario and with what we unfortunately see going on these days in the school environments, that instantaneous communication is priority.
So some of the key points, again, as Joe said, so as we begin to modernize our schools and we look at new clocks and new systems, you know, we just did a lockdown drill at Bishop's Peak Elementary School, and they don't have a really good intercom system. So, boom, this phone system has an intercom capability. You had speakers where there. So it's got all of those features of things we're going to need in terms of moving forward. This was actually a piggyback bid. So the actual pricing was tied to kind of a plan, which is what we looked at with Mr. Holcomb and kind of how that laid out. So that's how the pricing came about that you'll see was part of that proposal. They looked at seven different companies, maybe eight,
yeah,
that we talked about today, in terms of costs and proposals and what they had. And so, again, 15 months worth of work going into getting us to the point where we are today. Now, I have taken out the BG&T, the district office, as well as the service component of this proposal out of that, because the rest of it will be, you know, particularly Measure D funds to pay for the school sites, but we can't use those dollars at BG&T and at the district office. In terms of the service component, the 5 years, $200,000, just for the board to kind of get an. What does that mean to us? So we currently, last year, paid about $67,000 on our phone bill. So this will take the phone bill away. We won't have to pay the phone bill anymore because we'll be using our own UMAN and the internet in terms of our phone system. So E-rate, which is kind of what we've been paid back in the past for some of our costs with phones and things, that's shifting away from our ability to use it for phones. So 2 years ago, our phone bill was about $30,000. Then it was $45,000, last year $67,000. So those E-rate funds are moving away from phones. So even though it may seem like 5 years, $200,000 may seem like a lot, it actually is going to save us money over time. This is a phone system that we're going to slowly bring into our system. So it has capabilities that are like unbelievable of all the things you can do. So we want to slowly implement kind of what we do at each school site, try it out, test it as we kind of expand and move forward at our school sites and the district office. So, you know, putting the phones in, of course, and it's really simple. You go over to their teacher desk right now, and you plug the phone into the internet jack. And that's it. That's how it works. And then they actually have a little port so that you can plug your from the phone itself into your computer so that your computer works as well. So all internet based. And so it's really I think forward thinking, where we're headed type of thing, and it's going to be huge from the tech side as well, and all the pain and agony that we go through currently when a phone system goes down, from our electricians to our tech staff and trying to handle all those help desk calls. I mean, this is a really positive step in the right direction for us. Questions?
Mrs. Sheffer.
Will the additional load of having the phones running through internet, will it slow down connectivity or internet or computer time?
Yeah, so there's a particular protocol that's used by phones that mitigates that, allows us to mitigate that. It's called quality of service. So it makes sure, because if you're waiting for a web page to load, you can wait an extra second or two for that web page image to load, whatever it might be. But if you're making a phone call, you have to hear the other person right as it's happening. You kind of hear a digital static, we call it. So there's quality of service that makes sure that happens in conjunction with the data that flows through the rest of the network. This board has approved a lot of the upgrading of that infrastructure already. So we have such a good foundation to put something like this on top of that other districts have done around the county, and are now having to go back to the infrastructure and say, okay, we need to replace this because we're running out of speed here, or bandwidth, or whatever the case might be. So we're in a really good stance, and no, it will not affect any of the flow of data, I'll say, for the kids.
Okay, and how old is our current system?
So that's why being future-oriented with this system is key. In some cases, we have some phones that are 18 years old, so and some phone systems, such as at Slow High, that are 18 years old. So it's been around for a long, long time, and you can hear the thing screaming, actually, when you walk by the room at the closet there. It's ready to go.
So do we expect the new system to last a long time? I mean, in terms of, you know, oftentimes we have to replace our computers or our cell phones because the bandwidth from the web or because the software doesn't won't handle
right. This is more of a solid state kind of a technology that's just based upon the flow of data. So it really comes down to, again, to that infrastructure, that network infrastructure that we have really invested in, and that's good because it puts us really far out to have the foundation for all these phones. They're just a phone. They're not going to change. The firmware on them doesn't change. In some cases, we have neighboring districts that have the same phones from Cisco that are upwards of just as old as ours are. So they're here to last, and that's why sticking with a company that has a good support base, good hardware, good licensing model, all of that stuff, so that we can continue to support it, whether it's now or 15 years from now.
So they won't become obsolete in
five to
6 years. Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Any additional questions?
It's a pretty big...
I can't resist this. I'm on a page that says shared chatter group. Is that like meetings? You can just like have a meeting with everyone?
We're going to slowly implement some of these
super fun, cool features
that are possibilities, yes.
Yeah,
I don't want to promise anybody super chatter groups yet until we get it going. No, but seriously, for distance learning,
such a
for, I mean, being able to, you know, tie in and have, you know, multiple people tie into a classroom to talk or go through. I mean, it's a balance in terms of the you know, it's unlimited of the things that it will do.
Strategic advantages with the system overall, whether it's backup systems or whether it's those types of features, the icing on the top. Yeah, that's distance learning is kind of what we're trying that out for. So, yeah.
Okay, is there anyone from the public that would like to comment? Please.
I'm sorry, I'm just not tech. Yes, I'm talking about this. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Rita Rodriguez from the preschool at Hawthorne. My question is, so a couple of days ago, the power went out. And with the power went the phones.
Yep.
How is this going to work? I'm not tech savvy whatsoever. So, like, if the power goes out and everything is linked up to a computer, which is linked to electricity, what's going to happen?
Right. So we just invested in our E-rate purchases.
Sorry. Thank you.
So we just got what's called an uninterruptible power supply system for each site, and that'll help supply the core equipment should the power go out. I don't know if you know the way that these newer products work. They use what's called power over Ethernet, and that means pretty much the same connection that gives you the data gives you the power. So you don't have to run a separate cable for power. You don't have to do anything extra. You just pretty much give it that jack, like Ryan was saying, and you're good to go. It gets its power, it gets its data, it gets its quality of service and everything and so forth. So if the power goes out and we have our UPS systems installed at each site, then we're good to go. And we can suffice a power outage given any period of time. We can link those together as well to make a they go for days if we need to. So strategic advantages to making sure that we don't get too many of those, that we end up with 3 days worth of power outage, and we don't need that. But something that would suffice a power outage within reasonable standards. So sometimes there may be a couple hours, sometimes maybe there are the whole day. So finding that balance in there to suffice for those outages is key. Yeah.
We also have a cell phone at every site.
We do have
for emergencies just in case.
Anyone else? Then I'm seeking a motion. Is this discussion only, or
no, approval
is
tonight.
This approval? I'm seeking a motion.
I can get back to the beginning, though. I move approval of item number 9.03. The VOIP, is that how we got? We just refer to it.
Voice over Internet Protocol. VoIP,
Communications Modernization Contract.
Even I've learned it.
VoIP.
Okay, so I have a motion by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with two absent.
Thank you. Thanks, Jill. It's exciting. All right. The
next item, 9.04.
Pinkerton Show begins.
Approve new account clerk position.
Go. Yeah, so, you know, as we've talked about at study sessions as well as board meetings, we've really kind of bare-bones staff to start the Measure D program with staffing. And so what we found was it kind of overwhelmed, I would say, our current staff over the summer with the projects and everything. And so the nice part about that was we were really able to see what are the areas that we need assistance in. Instead of just adding positions, adding people, you know, now we kind of know, okay, we need another kind of account clerk tech to help Kelly Lee, who's currently working with the bond measure program with all of the, you know, accounting and books and just keeping track of projects and change orders and everything that ties into it. So we went to the – actually met with the staff. They gave us a recommendation of duties, got it approved by the Personnel Commission. And so we're bringing forward the recommendation tonight to the board to approve an account clerk position for the Measure D program. So paid out of Measure D fund. So Measure D can only pay for staff that is strictly tied to the actual you know, Measure D projects. And so this seems like a perfect fit. It's going to help out a ton. We have some really those four huge projects that are going to start up. So it's really time to bring this person on and make sure that we stay ahead of the game in terms of paperwork and where we're at moving forward. And so my ask tonight is that we approve this position.
So, Mr. Millar?
So the position would be, is described by the Personnel Commission and will be set for the pay rate based on that description, Personnel Commission rules?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And it would only last during the bond measure. So this position will go away at that point.
Right. The wording on this is a little awkward to me. This position will continue until the duties are no longer needed or the Measure D program has concluded.
So I could envision that maybe we wind down towards the end of Measure D. Maybe there's only one project. Maybe just having the one clerical support staff at the end of the bond measure is all that we need. And so at such time that we feel like the account clerk is no longer needed with the duties, that we would stop that position. So it may not be the actual last day we spend the last penny of Measure D dollars. It would be when the duties, it could be sooner than the end.
So maybe something like the duration of this position shall not exceed the length of the Measure D program?
Absolutely perfect.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's what you just I thought.
Well, it could be less. It just won't exceed.
It could be less.
It won't exceed. It could be less, but
it won't exceed it. We won't keep this person after Measure D.
Absolutely not, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
that would set the limit, the time limit. Could be sooner, but that would set the.
So if I would be willing to make a motion with that change in.
That's great.
In wording. Okay, then I'll move approval of item 9.04, a new account clerk position for Measure D.
I'll second.
Mr. Millar?
I was just going to say we're actually approving the position, not the wording of the position description. But I'm fine with the change.
Okay. Okay, so I have a motion by myself, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 5-0 with 2 absent. Measure D, item 9.05, Measure D, ratification of change orders.
So, yeah, these are all change orders that came in front of the board at our study session that were reviewed. Mr. Holcomb has worked specifically with both Rick Stimson, who's here tonight, as well as Steve Stewart, and with the contractors to narrow it down. The Del Mar Waterline Morrow Elementary sewer projects, those notices of completion, this is kind of the end of that program for them. And so this was kind of the last, you know, get together, haggle out the actual price. You know, it initially was twice as much as what we have here tonight, and so kudos to both Mr. Holcomb and Mr. Simpson for bringing that in line and getting it to where it needed to be. Kim, if you'll pull up the second change order, actually I wanted to show the board kind of how we've laid these out, and hopefully that it's a helpful thing for you. So, you know, we don't, as the pro, as As the project progresses, we try to bring change orders to the board. It's not, we don't wait until the very end to approve them all. So if you'll see at the very end, what we've done is the contracted amount, you'll see there, any previously approved change orders, what this current change order amount is, and then the revised contract. So that way for the board knows kind of what's been approved in the past, where we're at currently, and looking at that overall change order percentage to the total contract. So hopefully that's a helpful thing for you, because again, we bring these to you in cycles, not all together, so now you can keep track of kind of the overall progress of potential change orders. So the second change order is actually slow tennis courts. We're kind of finished at Morro Bay, but there were two key issues at the San Luis courts that this kind of addresses. One was the fabric that we had to use over the high-pressure gas line right by San Luis Drive on kind of on the street side of the courts. And so that was something that we worked through and actually became an easier method of laying the courts down and utilizing was doing that, as well as we had some transite pipe and basically a drain that had to be lifted. We were supposed to, in the plans, were to reuse it, but once they got there, there wasn't any way to use the current drain, so they had to lift that up and replace all of the pipe with it. So that's the second aspect of the change order that's there. And I think the third one was just was basically scrubbing down the poles at Morro Bay High when they sleeved them to make sure that they were weather consistent. So though the Morro Bay High project is done, we're continuing on with the San Luis Obispo High tennis courts, so we're getting closer. They're looking like tennis courts now, and so we're looking forward to hopefully meeting those November deadlines and having those completed. So tonight I'm asking approval on the following change orders.
Change order two and two?
Yes.
Oh, I see. May I just continue? Go ahead, Marilyn. So you're approving change order number two at Del Mar and Morro Elementary.
Yes.
What is elementary potholing?
Mr. Holcomb?
That's where they move ahead of their backhoe and open a section of pavement up, dig it up to see where the pipes may or may not be before they hit them with a backhoe. So they're moving ahead with crowbars and saw cutting and shovels to make sure they don't cause more damage as opposed to repairing something.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. In each of these two, you'll see, and I know that they talked about this at the change order process meeting, but what we do is we have an inspector on site, so a lot of times it's a labor and materials, so we have the inspector checking and watching the time that the people are actually on the job with time tickets, and then getting the actual cost of the material. So it's ensuring that we keep it in a realm that's not a make-believe number and it's real. So I think that method was used on both of these.
Okay, is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board.
Do we do these together or separately, or does it matter?
I think it's presented as one item.
One is sufficient unless there's an issue where you need to make a different determination on anyone.
I would move ratification of the change orders as presented in item 9.05.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with two absent. Item 9.06, Measure D, approve architectural contracts.
A procedural question,
sir.
Madam Chair. I have to recuse from the PMSM architect contract approval. So shall I leave
I
the
would
county?
Recommend that we do separate actions on these then.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we can start with the first with Pratt Architects.
Please.
So we have two kind of final stages of the temp housing. One is the area in between the current food service restroom and the old gym. And then the other is the adding two additional classrooms over behind the old gym and actually building a basically for the fire department, it's kind of a turnout lane It's a hammerhead turnout. And so what we did is we put those two scopes out to three different architect firms. We got bids back, and so the lowest bid for the area that in between was Pratt Architects. And so we'll start with that in terms of asking the board for approval. And this is a fixed fee. So it's not based on how much it actually costs. It's the fixed fee, no matter what the ending construction cost is.
Mr. Buckman.
Unless there's questions, I'll move approval. The Pratt Architect.
So I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0 with 2 absent.
So the next contract was, again, the hammerhead as well as the 2 additional classrooms. And kind of revising the pathway in between the old gym to make sure it's all ADA compliant. And so the lowest bid was from PMSM Architects for that work. And so that was our recommendation to the board for that phase 4, I believe, work at Slough High.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this? Okay, seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board comment?
If there's no further discussion, I'll move approval of the San Luis High School Temporary Housing Phase 4 project as set out in item 9.06.
And I'll second that. So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So we have 4 in favor, 1 abstention. 2 absent. Moving on to, we have Measure D, Bid 266, approved notice of completion for San Luis Obispo High Annex Demo and Morro Bay High School tank removal.
So as kind of as a process for the board moving forward, I'd like to move the notices of completion into the consent agenda. So the board, so just kind of potentially speeds up the process. You can always pull it. We can always talk about it if needed, but I think that'll be in the future we'll do that. But this current one that's up for notice of completion, they've demolished the annex to prepare for the new 12-classroom annex building, which is fantastic. It's ready to go. And then they also took away all of the kind of old asbestos and tanks that were associated at Morro Bay High School, again, preparing for the modernization there. And so that work has been completed.
So then I would ask, does the notice of completion trigger the payment of retentions and the
yes.
final payment to the contractor on these projects? Okay.
45 days.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment? Okay. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. I'm seeking approval of item 9.07.
I'll move approval of 9.07.
I'll second.
So I have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with 2 absent. Moving on, we have 9.08, Measure D, Bid 267.
So again, another notice of completion for the board. This is the slow temporary housing that Vernon Edwards was part of, as well as the C.L. Smith new kindergarten classroom. Kind of finishes their kindergarten wing, has a restroom inside, kind of fixed up the pavement area around kindergarten playground, as well as the drainage around that classroom. So looks great. Work has been completed.
Okay. Anyone from the public would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Is there any board comment?
Yeah. I'm sitting here because we've heard this before at the study session, but this is really kind of exciting.
It's great.
Getting notices of completion.
Yes,
we're
it's
getting
a good thing.
The job done.
Yes.
And it just dawned on me. This is really great stuff. If there's no other board comments, I'd move approval of item 9.08, the notice of completion of the C.L. Smith Kindergarten and San Luis High School, San Luis High Temporary Housing Phase 1 and 2.
So I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with two absent. Item 9.09, approve agreement with PG&E for the Proposition 39 Zero Net Energy ZNE pilot project for Los Osos Middle School. Again, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so Dave Houghton is actually here to answer questions for the board and kind of give you a little bit of an update about what this potential project is and our potential kind of partnership and grant funds, which is always nice. So we actually have plans to utilize our Prop 39 funds, which are specifically for energy efficiency projects throughout the district that have been given to us by the state, have to be for those purposes. We've done some great lighting projects with Dave's expertise in getting those dollars. You have to prove that, the energy savings meets the requirements, all those types of things. So if anybody's been in one of our high school gyms recently, absolutely fantastic. The orange glow is gone. And so their LED lights on and off instantly. I mean, it's just great. So our goal is to kind of move that whole wave through every single one of our classrooms in the district using those Prop 39 dollars. Not only is it better in terms of lighting in classroom, but also energy savings, budget in the future. So this particular project with Los Osos Middle School, which I'm going to have Dave kind of talk about and explain to the board, is kind of taking that kind of same frame and really doing kind of a bigger project here, and specifically because we have the solar panels on campus that made it, the potential of us actually having this zero net energy project. And I'll have Dave kind of explain that.
Hello again.
Hello.
So zero net energy is one of the new terms that we hear a lot in the energy world. And it actually is going to be part of California law. And starting in 2020, all new residences will be zero net energy. And by 2030, new commercial structures will have to be zero net energy. And what that means is a building that makes as much energy as it uses. So talk about exciting. I mean, it's a pretty major shift in our whole way of looking at buildings. So Prop 39, you're familiar with that. This district has been a participant in that to the tune of over $1 million in grants so far that's funding mostly lighting upgrades, and the gym lighting was the first installation of that. So in addition to that, the California Energy Commission, which is administering this whole Prop 39 thing, they put together this pilot program to do zero net energy schools. They want to get more examples of zero net energy buildings out into the community, use them as case studies, and be able to enable the district to show what it's doing as well. So they put out a solicitation, almost a year ago, I think. And I saw that and talked to Anthony, and we decided that this school would be a good candidate for that. And so we submitted the paperwork on that, and we made it through the first round, and then the second round, and then we were picked. So this school is one of seven schools in the state of California that's part of this zero net energy pilot program. So what does that get us? It already got us a whole bunch of consultant time, and there's been a number of meetings, and there's been a computer model built of the school, and a lot of different analysis. And so we have this report that then is recommending. Here's the school in 3D from the analysis that was done. So we have a list of items. It's seven or eight items, and it's mostly controls and lighting. It's nothing too dramatic. There were some things were considered but discarded, skylights and increasing wall insulation. This climate's kind of tough because it's too easy. It's too nice here. So anyway, that is the program for this. So we're going to retrofit all the lighting in this school to LEDs. We're going to take a number of control measures. We're going to upgrade the heat pumps at the portables. And that's most of it. And when we do all that work, when we look at the energy that's generated by the 200 kW solar system out in the parking lot, and you do the math on it, it turns out that this school then is a zero net energy school. So that's pretty much the plan. The other thing it gets us is capital funding. So The contract that's before you for approval tonight is between PG&E and the school district, and basically they're kicking in $200,000 towards the work to be done. The remainder, we think that the total cost of this is going to be about $400,000, $450,000. The other $250,000 is going to come from the rest of the district's allocation for Prop 39. So we think that it's going to be almost completely paid for by the Prop 39 program. The gas company is also involved in this, and one of the reasons that this school was selected is the kind of unique situation that we're in here, where we have PG&E for electric, but gas company, which is a Sempra Southern Cal utility for the gas supplier, and they're all involved in this, and they've all had participants in it as well. So it kind of rings all their bells, and that's partly why we were selected. So that's where it's at.
So we actually had Deidre Sakai from DWK, our attorney, go through this document, has made some adjustments. PG&E actually agreed to some of our language requests that she kind of had ferreted out with both Dave and Anthony. So that was a positive step, I think, in the right direction. And then the other part that we haven't even discussed yet is the potential impact on the STEAM program at Loams, right? How can we tie what they're doing, how they're testing, zero net energy into science, math, you know, technology. So all the great things that they're doing here, this could just be a great kind of core component that fits right into that. So really excited about the potential and being one of the, you know, seven schools in the state that is able to get this accomplished. So any questions?
Mr. Millar?
I noticed paragraph 14 of the agreement refers to CPUC approval, or I guess the project subject to changes or modifications by the CPUC. Is that kind of boilerplate but not really expected to impact the project, or are there things pending before the CPUC that might cause
issues? So the CPUC is the regulator of PG&E, and it's probably just a requirement that PG&E has to put in those contracts that there's some kind of oversight. And the PUC, I think, does have some kind of oversight power on the Prop 39 projects. I really wouldn't expect to hear anything from the CPUC on this.
Basically, to put us on notice that they have, but they could, but we don't expect.
They could, I suppose. Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, then I'll bring it back. Is there any additional board comment? Okay, then I'm seeking approval of item 9.09.
I will move approval of item 9.09.
I'll second that.
I have a motion by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 5-0 with two absent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very exciting. It's really exciting. Okay, we're moving on then to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, acceptance of donations. 10.03, disposal of surplus property. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of purchase orders and CalCards.
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.05.
And I'll second that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That passes 5-0 with two absent. Does anyone have any items for the advance agenda? Okay, seeing none, we have reports by board members. Mr. Buckman.
I'm not even sure where to put this, so it's either advanced agenda, it's really just a question. And so I noticed in the resolution on the textbooks that the resolution was posted in three locations in the district. And what I'm wondering is if there's a way we could just post it at all the school sites and make sure that there's just a little more exposure.
I think that's a legal technicality, that it has to be posted in at least three places.
Right, and I'm asking staff if it would make sense or if it could be done, but it seems like we have a little more knowledge of it out there.
If the board agrees with
it. I would think that posting it at all the sites would just be a matter of communicating with our principals. It would be pretty simple to do because they have their own posting bulletin areas as well, so it would just be one additional. Again, it's the idea behind it is to ensure that we're communicating that interest. So if that's the board's will, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to do.
Is there any objection from the board? Then I would assume that is supported and it
wouldn't be hard to do, and it probably would be best practice. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Are there any additional board reports?
I'd just like to do a little quick shout out to William Walters. I spoke with him this week. As we all know, he was our nominee to the County Teacher of the Year, and he, in fact, was the County Teacher of the Year, and he was letting me know that he was also one of 13 considered for the State Teacher of the Year. I think that's just a tremendous honor. It's so well-deserved, and I just wanted to congratulate him on that distinction.
Well done. Well, then, if there's no additional board reports, I believe that we will adjourn. Our next regularly scheduled board meeting is November 1st, the district office, J2. We're adjourned.
Thank you. Did we set a record?
No.